Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg.
Hey, Fred, I've been kind of excited to talk over a topic that it really got triggered recently by the condo collapse in Surfside, North Miami Beach. And but I've been thinking about it a lot even before that. And it's the subject of safety, which is a huge, huge subject. I mean, you can get master's degrees and attend conferences and read books. So it's a very large subject. But what I've been thinking about specifically relates to, is safety a quality characteristic? I think I know my answer, but here's posing the question. Mm-hmm. Is safety a quality characteristic, or is it something like a binary that it's a product is safe or it's not safe? There's no in between. And there's no gradation of safety, that type of topic. And what triggered with this accident is you know, I read all of the, I have a condo in Florida, and I read all of the
on the other side of the island, the peninsula.
and I read all of the correspondence, at least the public domain correspondence on this condo between the condo association and the inspectors and this type of thing. And it occurred to me at some point, is it the responsibility of people to say, you know, this condo is not safe? Or are they continuing to say, well, it's mostly safe, or, you know, and then it brought up the subject again, is safety a binary topic? Like, is something safe or not safe? And this is so important to talk about because we need to design safety into our products. And so how do we do that? And what is safety? And so I thought it'd be an interesting subject to chat with you about.
Yeah, well, I mean, is it binary variable? It's binary once it becomes after the fact, right? If something fails and it causes harm, well, then, oh, obviously it's not safe. It's during the design and like in this inspection routine, it's so much more than just an engineering problem. It's because building inspecting is they can look at it going, well, that's rebar and it's showing, that's typically not a good idea. Yet in my 40 years of doing building design, you know, inspections, I've never seen a building fail when it showed this kind of thing, you know, so we've got between 10 minutes and 10 years. We don't know.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of, I mean, you see it in a factory, right? You walk down the line and you see a rusted out old valve and it's in the main line and nobody's paid any attention to it. But if that valve doesn't work when there's an emergency, then you lose the whole plant, right? But the only time you would use it is in an emergency. And it becomes so we just don't even see it anymore. So I think safety gets after the fact, it's obvious. I think there's no doubt there.
No question.
Right. But the beforehand, and I know you've got a lot of experience working with different regulatory agencies and different industries that are regulating the safety factors of it. And it's more than that. In some industries it's regulated, right? And you have to do this, this, and this, and has to meet these sets of conditions and has to meet these certain requirements and blah, blah, blah. But even those are a compromise of trying to understand what's susceptible to society and to that particular circumstance.
Yeah, in fact, let's explore this a little in a broader way, because I want to introduce the subject of safety versus hazard versus risk. Mm-hmm. I've always taught, and I consult, that risk needs to be reduced to an acceptable level. And so, in other words, if you have a product or you have an FMEA or you have an action or you have some methodology you're implementing, this is going to impact the risk and it needs to be reduced to an acceptable level. And that is a variable. That is a company decision guided by standards, guided by experience, guided by management, guided by cost-benefit trade-offs.
Guided by TV news, you know?
Yes, guided by media.
Yeah, well, you know, because the condo ones, I think there was another unit or facility in Miami that was evacuated saying, oh, we're going to call this one not safe now. All of a sudden now we've got this thing. We need to relook at what we're seeing. And okay, it was okay yesterday, but today it's bad.
Yeah. And nothing, of course, has changed on that condo other than the perception and the media and, of course, what happened in the other condo.
Right.
So totally true. So let me just say this, and this is not, I'm not reading anything, so this is totally off the cuff, so to speak. But in my practice, what I look at safety as like avoidance of harm or avoidance or something that is absent the damage or risk or injury. Hazard, I look at as a potential condition that could lead to, if it's triggered and activated, could lead to an unsafe condition. Whereas risk is the combination of the likelihood of the harm and the severity of harm. So these are terms that some people tend to equate. Others tend to look at totally separately, but they're related. And you almost have to consider all of it when you're having a conversation like we're having. There's a safety aspect, there's a hazard aspect, and there's a risk aspect to the discussion.
Yeah. See, I tend to, and you know, I know we've talked about all kinds of issues all through the years, but I tend to define risk as being uncertainty. I look at hazard as being the hazard analysis being the combination of there's severity and probability. And safety is the consequence, basically, what is going to happen. But I look at risk as that's why we do an FMEA. We don't know which are the issues that are going to be the high severity, high consequence in enough detail to prioritize and focus on it. So we use various tools and activities and analysis and testing to reduce the uncertainty, to reduce the our understanding of what could lead to a hazard turning into a safety problem.
I think if I recall in some of our podcasts, we differentiate not just us, it's differentiated universally between the business risk and the technical risk.
Yeah.
And so on the technical risk side, that's where I look at the consequence as the severity, as well as the likelihood of harm consequence. Mm-hmm. And that's more of the technical side. And when you get to the business side, you get to the uncertainty. But I think what we're surfacing here is anybody working at a company, you need to make sure your company is on solid ground on your definitions. So when you're talking about safety and hazard and risk, and you're doing hazard analysis and risk analysis, that you have good body of knowledge and you have an agreement within your company as to what these terms mean and how you go about ensuring that risk is reduced to an acceptable level.
Well, one of them, a bad example is, and you see it in building codes all the time, in building facility, you know, creating a structure basically, is the design team essentially does what the inspectors are looking for, which is independent of what, you know, all of the risk or all of the hazards that could be present within a structure and it's the way it supports loads and engineered for designs and so on. But if they're only looking for these three things, then the design makes sure that we meet those three things and we move on with judicious functional design after that. But that will vary depending on the person doing the work and design as how conscientious they are of it. But I've seen companies that, well, when I ask him about safety, he says, well, we're regulated, so we only do what's in the standard.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, we're safe because we got this certification from this agency and they said we're safe. Well, what did they do? Well, they made us do a parts count prediction and a model and they signed off on it. And I, did you use any of that information to inform your design? No, no, we just fill out the forms and send it to them. And I'm like, okay, this is not good. It's kind of my thought.
You could, if you could see me over here, you'd see I'm shaking my head and my face is getting red.
Okay.
So this is the subject of another podcast, but let's make it real clear to our listeners that, you know, I don't want to speak for you, Fred. I'll speak for myself, but I have a hunch that we agree here is that, yes, of course, you have to meet regulatory compliance, but that is not sufficient.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally
always.
Agree.
Always.
Now you're seeing always. Me shake my head up and down and big smile. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Always you have to work towards safe and reliable. The objectives that your company sets, the objectives that are necessary to meet customer satisfaction and a safe product, irrespective of regulatory compliance. And so you need to do both. And if you're doing less than both, you're not doing enough.
Well, but you've seen that where the safety objective is get certified,
yeah.
Period. And that's it.
Oh, yes.
And that's the ones we usually get involved with, you know, as consultants. Mm-hmm. But the idea of the variable part of it, it affects design, it affects maintenance, it affects, you know, how we judge it. And that's a hard part to quantify. But it starts, just as you're talking about, Carl, is you got to have clear definitions and what's considered good enough and not good enough. It's if it's not part of the culture and part of a common understanding within your organization, well, then you're really just kind of doing lip service through the safety side of this stuff. You need to have clear boundaries and conditions and cases and so on. To me, Carl, it's sort of like teaching somebody ethics, right? In the engineering professional societies, we all have these codes of ethics. And the way it's commonly taught is here's a case. And it's a nuanced case. It's not obvious. You know, somebody's just taking a straight bribe to alter what vendor they picked. And there's a clear conflict of interest and it's illegal. That's clear. That's unethical. But sometimes it's the case is, well, we could design it a little more safely, or we could design it so it saves a little more money. And the management wants us to do money. Should I, you know, do whistleblower or not? Because this is clearly not a safe, path to run. But yeah. Every one of those cases is everybody that talks about it comes up with a slightly different gradation of when would trigger going over. And without that kind of training within common understanding within an organization, engineers are left to their own devices and in interests to decide, I need to stand up for this or not. And that's where I think that's a good culture has that kind of discussions on a regular basis.
Absolutely. So what we're talking about here is how to specify safety as well as how to achieve safety.
Mm-hmm.
This is a broad topic. My go-to book, the one I really appreciate, is System Safety Engineering and Management by Roland and Moriarty. And I use that as a reference, but there's tons of references on this. And let me start with an example, and then let's explore how you specify mm-hmm. something like safety, because safety is like a quality characteristic in my opinion.
Right.
And how do you specify quality? How do you specify reliability? How do you specify safety so you can achieve those? And there's no such thing as absolute perfection. And so let's take an example. Let's say we're developing a laser pen or some type of laser device.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be, we want to avoid harm. We don't want people to get hurt. We don't want their eyes to get hurt. We don't want their skin to get hurt. And so you can specify certain limits, like on laser pens, if I recall right, there's like a maximum 5 milliwatt for a certain type of device.
Right.
And that's a threshold. It's not perfect, but typically if you stay below that, you're going to minimize the harm that can happen. But there's also the subject of wavelength. So you have laser wavelength. The metric is nanometers. And certain wavelengths have more opportunity for damage than other wavelengths.
Mm-hmm.
And You have the length of exposure. So you have different variables involved when you're talking about potential for harm. And then you can set specifications that minimize the harm. And let's use that for, I'll use the phrase acceptable level, because there's never, you walk out the door and get in your car, there's risk involved. It's, you can be in an unsafe condition. Even though you've made good practices, you bought a car, you keep it maintained, that type of thing, there's still a possibility of unsafe conditions. And so you want to bring that risk to an acceptable level. Same thing with the laser pin, same thing with tires on your car. Mm-hmm. I did a legal project, which I won't describe the company or even the details, but the general sense was somebody was driving in with tires that were bald. And so that's an unsafe condition. But then is the tire manufacturer responsible when there was a blowout and a person was harmed? And so you get, well, okay, so how bald were they? What was the level of tread?
Yeah.
How many years? Was there any rot going on? There's a lot to it. What speed? What loads?
Yep.
Et cetera.
Yep.
So there's a lot of variables involved to make the decision, is something safe or not safe? And so I'm trying to embrace both the concept of variable as well as safe or not safe in our discussion.
Well, what was the... I know you know this one from the auto industry. Wasn't there a book written, Unsafe at Any Speed?
Yes.
Yes. You just triggered
that
memory.
Nader,
Ralph Nader. Yeah, that's the guy. But he kind of made... But he was making the political point, basically, that it, you know, this by design is just inherently unsafe. It was kind of going over the top on that. But, and then it ended that car line, as far as I remember. But the idea was, is that it's, that variable is part of society, you know, and I think for cars now, I mean, when I was growing up and I got a car, I could change the oil, I could change the spark plugs, I could set the timing, I rotated the tires. My dad made me do that just to make sure I knew how to change a tire, because flats mm-hmm. were a thing then. And I had a toolkit that I could actually, you know, I needed help for some of the activities, but I could, you know, do a lot of things under the hood. Today, I don't even look. It's kind of scary in there.
So, yes.
But that also translates to I have to just take it to the shop and let somebody else take care of it. And I don't inspect it as often. I mean, the most common thing I do now is I notice that the windshield wiper's fluid's out. And so, oh, yeah, well, I should get an oil change too, I suppose.
But you're probably not checking the all the fluids. You're probably not checking the pipes and the...
Oh, the hoses and fittings
and
belts and everything. I don't even know if there are belts under the hood in the car I got now and where to check the oil. I've gotten... One part of it is that the product is better. It's more robust. It instead of having the checked oil like my old late model 60s car, every time I filled the gas, because it was very likely I had to put some oil in it. It was a great big V8 engine. I carried a case of oil in the trunk because it used it almost as much as I did gas. To where I had a hybrid. And it was like, this car's maintenance free. I drove it for 20,000 miles and I'm like, oh yeah, I should probably do something on this.
Yeah. It occurs to me that part of the discussion about safety being binary or variable is that oftentimes you have a cascading series of events that lead to an unsafe outcome. And in other words, you have maybe a defect in a product or possible, but you also have a misuse possibly by a user, or you have a condition that is unusual or happens, a trigger event. Mm-hmm. All of these can be modeled with reliability tools such as fault tree analysis.
Yeah.
And you can get to the likelihood of that unsafe condition or event, the likelihood of the unwanted event, if you could call it that. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes in safety discussions with clients, I want to look at how they are, whether they have tandem events that strung together lead to the unwanted event. And if so, then a probabilistic risk assessment or a fault tree analysis is appropriate. In fact, I'll even state this being pretty well experienced in FMEA. FMEA, yes, can be a very good tool, but it is not the tool for tandem events to model them. Nope. And so you often want to use fault tree analysis in addition to it. But FTA is a discussion, at least if you're doing a gap analysis, you want to bring it up as to whether there's a potential gap there that might be a useful tool when you're talking about safety issues.
Well, I mean, in some realms, even fault tree is not sufficient. I mean, it's pretty versatile and it handles lots of circumstances, but it underlying it all, it assumes that each event is independent. So common cause events, for example, in Florida, having a hurricane blow through can cause lots of things to go wrong simultaneously, mm-hmm. as you know. But the idea is the level, like nuclear industry and chemical plants, would start with fault trees as a fundamental building block, but then quickly move into Markov analysis and Petri nets and other much more sophisticated modeling. And even those, though, often miss the point of, well, the system is not static. It's going to age. And that's where, you know, even in a basic design, we've got all these tools. We have finite element analysis and computational fluid dynamics, and we got all these other things. But if the materials are considered pristine and new, we're missing out on a potential to get at these issues that we would consider reliability, but certainly could change the effects, you know, that lead to safety problems as you go.
So this is a great lead-in, but let's follow up on a podcast on this overlap between safety and reliability.
Yep.
In other words, you have the safety tools, you have reliability tools, you really have quality tools, and there's overlap between these tools, and that's a subject that I'd love to explore with you as to, and it gets into the whole subject of a reliability program, mm-hmm. where you can bring together all the tools. So
did we answer your question here, though? Is safety binary or variable?
I think there's a argument for both. There are certainly variables that are involved in safety. And so how safe is something? And you can get into that whole subject of risk where you talk about the likelihood of harm as well as the severity of harm. But there are also specifications and company policy and guidance as to when something is considered safe or when risk is considered acceptable.
Right.
And so I think you have it by understanding the subject really well, you can hold both of those concepts in place, that something is safe because it meets your objectives and the risk is acceptable, but also understand the variables that go into a safe outcome.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Yeah. So we're going to say it's both and for good reason. All right, cool. Now, if you want to chime in on this topic and or other topics, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there you'll find a SpeakPipe widget. It's also on the sidebar of our show notes now, also on the site, that allow you to record up to 90 seconds, I believe it is, and ask your question or make your comment, and that'll become part of the discussion. We'd love to hear from you. If talking to us is not your game or recording a message for us, there's a contact form there. You can also find Carl and I and the other hosts of the show on our About pages or on LinkedIn. And as always, we certainly encourage you to participate by giving us a shout and let us know what's on your mind. So with that, Carl, I don't know. Did you get any notices from your condo in Florida, even though you were on the other side of the island?
I'm getting almost hourly notices because of the tropical storm, soon to be Hurricane Elsa, moving up the coast. And so we're preparing, even though I'm in Michigan, We have lots of info about it.
Oh, man. All right. Well, stay safe. I guess you're far enough away that now it's just tornadoes you got to worry about. But
Very good.
All right. We'll talk to you later, Carl.
Talk to you later, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.